This is Shane Heal, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Yeah, NBA Australia. How you going? That's right, it is NBA Australia. It's Wednesday, hump day, October 14, and for the 501st time, if you're a Star Wars fan, the old 501st, not bloody bad. I am your host, James Clements. I'm a writer sometimes for Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag, and literally whoever else. I'll take it from anyone at this point who wants to pay me for some of that booze money. Bit of that booze money, what do you reckon? I'm here in Larry Armour Studios where old mate is very, very, very clearly concocting some sort of ancient artifact out of used coffee mugs and cups. And there's her breakfast. Fantastic. Unreal. Let's fucking lock this, end this lockdown, can we? Jesus. Anyway, I am here in Larry Armour Studios giving you the lowdown on the NBA offseason now. That's right, because that's what we're in. While repping straight just a little bit. That's what we do. All right, so 501st episode, we've got the second half of our really awesome chat with dead set Aussie legend Shane the Hammer Heal. The second half is great. We go into some real awesome stuff about his time overseas, talking trash to Gary Payton. Real nitty gritty, interesting NBL stuff. But just talking about his coaching and all that sort of stuff. It's great fun. Really, really love this part of the chat with Hammer. And I feel like it's a really cool thing to have it across two episodes. So enjoy that. But we're going to start off with some season 1920 winners and losers, a few yeah-nahs from some listeners, an Outback Takehouse, an unpopular opinion of the day, and a real quick look at the odds for next season's title, because it only finished 2 days ago, but we're talking about next season. So that's going to be brought to you by playup.com.au. Go to playup.com.au/NBA Australia for all your NBA betting needs. And we'll finish off with a brand new Jingles HR. Bloody real. All right, big show, fun show. A lot of Hammer, a lot of yeah-nahs, a lot of winners and losers. Love it. This is NBA Show episode 501. Let's go. We're all faking the fence.
This is Matthew Dellavedova and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack.
Oh, you better. Or the Reneg attack, I guess, if you're Basketball Australia. Because that's the way we're going to start off today's show. Because it's the way we start every show here at NBA Australia with the daily. Now it's weekly, I guess. So, well, you know, that's how it goes. That's right. Australia doesn't currently have a coach for the Boomers for next year's Olympics. Brett Brown has stepped down, which came as a bit of a shock because it sort of came out of nowhere. What, a day after basically the NBA Finals? And I mean, Bogut had an interesting tweet about it where it's like, look, man, there's been a lot of shit that's gone on with the Boomers in the last bunch of years. And he's like, oh, I could write a book about it. But it's going to be an interesting one when I next do an Andrew Bogut slams a bunch of Twitter snowflakes from Twitter. But he did come out and say, basically, I feel for BA and stress there should be no ill feeling to Brett or Basketball Australia. There's a lot more to this. And the last few years, Boomers-wise, than people ever know. Perhaps a topic for a podcast. One day, as I've already said to Bogey, feel free to come on NBA Australia, big fella. He was the guest on the 100th episode. We're now at 500. Ripe for a return for the Bogey big man. But it is pretty interesting. The timing, look, it makes a bit of sense, doesn't it? I mean, with the coaching carousel going on right now in the NBA, which I'm about to get into, Brett Brown sitting there going, look, if the NBA season is going to go through the Olympics, if I'm going to snag an assistant coaching role or some sort of front office spot somewhere, I mean, it's going to be a bit weird to be trying to travel around, scout, prepare for an Olympics that'll be maybe taking place during an NBA season. And, I mean, this is the big thing, I think, that I'm not entirely convinced it's been sort of bashed about the head. I mean, just imagine the amount of travel that he'd have to do if he was going to be in the States, if he was going to be having some sort of coaching gig already. In the time of COVID, would you really want to be traveling that fucking much from the States to Australia if you're going to, like, maybe, have your dudes as well, like your assistants or people involved in Basketball Australia out there scouting for you with the Australian dudes playing in Europe? Are you just watching a shit ton of tape rather than travel? I don't know. I mean, especially if there's a possibility where all of our NBA guys are out because they're still playing in the NBA. I mean, wouldn't he want to see maybe some of the domestic and Euro players in person in that case? So, look, it makes sense. And without him in charge of Philly, I don't think we can get too burnt up about it as well, because suddenly he doesn't have like the complete day-in, day-out connection with Big Simo, Ben Simmons, and Aussie Matisse Thybulle. And, of course, Rowdy, who was on that roster at the end of the season. So, it's a tricky one. But at the same time, I think the big thing for him is literally he's probably just like, I want to get a job and remain a head coach in the NBA. And that probably means, you know, hanging out, spending time with different franchises, doing the old Tibbs move and like hanging out, learning from other coaches, if not even in an official capacity, but at least sort of going around, maybe consulting and keeping your nose in the game. And if he sort of just fucks off and then pops up coaching Australia, I mean, that's okay. But at the same time, his long-term future, you got to think about that. So the big question really comes down to now, like, who's going to take over? Gorge? Trevor Gleason? Will Weaver? Lamanis has already ruled himself out, he reckons. So I'm very interested to see what Basketball Australia will do. I say Dele player coach. That's all I want. But at the same time, it just rammed home once more just the fucking insanity of an NBA season that may or may not have NBA, well, an NBA season that may or may not run through the Olympics next year, if they happen, if the NBA season happens, who fucking knows at this point? But to get to this point and have our NBA players not representing Australia would just hurt your fucking heart. So, fingers crossed, the NBA and the Olympics, something figures itself out. I don't know. Speaking of coaches, Brett Brown might be out there trying to get a gig somewhere. We've got Billy Donovan, old Vegeta himself, cleaning house there in Chicago, getting rid of four assistant coaches. Not a surprise there. You want to get, you know, people that you know and work with on your bench. That's how it goes. But Ty Lue has emerged as a bit of a front runner for Houston at the moment. He's gaining steam in Houston, which would be interesting because I think that's a really good way of Ty Lue and Clutch leaning on Houston to get more money out of the Clippers, would be my guess, because he's also now up for a spot with New Orleans. No surprises there. So he's up for that gig, up for Houston, and obviously up for the Clippers gig where he was an assistant coach this year. But you very much get the feeling this is just Ty Lue going, I don't know, Steve Ballmer, owner of the Clippers. Houston want me to coach their team. Can I have some money, please? So it really does feel like he's going to get the Clippers gig at good coin, I'd probably say by the end of the week. I mean, he's just using Houston and New Orleans as leverage, my guess would be. But at the same time, I think he'd be a pretty good hire for Houston. You know, trying to figure out how the fuck to make Rusty Westbrook and James Harden work could be a good fucking test of his coaching nous, I'll tell you that much. But the big surprise was that Stan Van Gundy is a finalist there in New Orleans as well. And I love Stan, but I'm not entirely convinced he's the guy to convince Zion Williamson to lose weight. You know? Jesus. It's like, all right, coach, yeah, I'll lose some weight when you stop eating 40 popsicles a day. But the cool part from the Aussie point of view is that Will Weaver, erstwhile Sydney Kings coach, is also apparently in the mix for the New Orleans Pelicans gig. The bloke was with the Nets and the Long Island Nets when Trajan Langdon was there with Sean Marks. Now Trajan's in charge of New Orleans, and they shipped Diddy over there to Will and the Kings for safekeeping in the last NBL season. So a big, strong connection there. Not a surprise that Will would pop up specifically for New Orleans. So that's pretty cool. And there's also some interesting names popping. Dan, now that the finals are done, Chris Quinn, Dan Craig going to be looking at being looked at for the Pacers gig. Mike D'Antoni's going to be sitting there going, wait, what? This is Mike D'Antoni sitting there going, fuck, man. All right, $3 million a year, not four. Let's do it. And Dan Craig's apparently also being looked at for OKC and the Pelicans. Pretty interesting. I don't know. There's a lot of moving pieces. And now that the, I think we'll see Jason Kidd's name pop up a bunch. As I mentioned, I think on Monday's show, he was a weekend winner because his asking price just fucking skyrocketed after a year as an assistant with the Lakers. Good on him. Probably not Lionel Hollins. I think he's sort of done his dash. But look, you're seeing the Heat assistance being thrown out there. You'll see the same with the Lakers. So Makes sense. The Kings, they're putting together their front office. Monty McNair, he's hired Wes Wilcox, former Hawks GM, and Phil Jabbour from the Sixers as his personnel, player personnel VP. Paul Johnson from OKC is the director of basketball ops as well. Well, to be honest, nothing could be fucking worse than Vlade Divac and Peja Stojakovic half paying attention to the Kings, so good on him. And the sort of big news, and I'm going to get to this in a second, the Lakers haven't had their championship parade, obviously, because of COVID, and they can't really celebrate properly, which is pretty weird. I mean, J.R. Smith is very clearly just a super spreader waiting to happen, right? It's like, how are there so many JR clusters? Well, there's a couple of satellite Dion clusters as well. But the Lakers said, we cannot wait to celebrate our NBA title with our fans. After consulting with the city and the county, though, we've all agreed that a joyful and inclusive public celebration will take place as soon as it is safe to do so. So, 2028? In the meantime, thank you again, Lakers Nation, for your support. All right, cool. Well, makes sense. Can't have, it was weird even seeing just the sort of pictures from downtown LA on Monday where there was about 1,000 people sort of gathered and you're like, dude, that doesn't seem fucking smart right now. Not in LA, not in America. Unless you're going to a Trump rally like a fucking idiot. All right. Cool. Well, with all that in mind, let's wrap up the season, shall we? We'll just do a quick fly round and do a couple of weekend winners and losers, but for the entire 2019-2020 season. How's that sound? Sound like fun? And then we'll get to some yeah nahs, and then we'll do our second half of the chat with Hammer right after, you know, all these ones.
Oh, my God. I won! I won! Ah! Recapping our day's top story, the winner of today's state lottery is me, Kent Brockman. Can we get a shot of me?
There you go.
In other news...
That's right. Other news, the weekend winners and losers for the entire season of 2019-20. Obviously, the big winner, LeBron James. Four titles. I think I mentioned this on Monday show, at least the second best basketball player ever. Basically, it becomes a fun argument that we can have from here on out. MJ, still greater than LeBron in my, you know, view. It's obvious, and we're going to get to this in a little bit later, but that's great. He comes out of a massive season, 10th finals, wins his fourth title, and I don't know, he's still got the chip on his shoulder, so that's fine. Because at the same time, he did give us the gem on Monday on What My Damn Respect Too. LeBron, who do you think's really disrespecting you at this point? You know, you've won four titles, MJ won six. It's not disrespect to point that out. Everyone is like, no one is sitting there going, you know what? Ah, look, I don't think LeBron's good. You know? Everyone's like, LeBron's fucking awesome. He's only won four titles versus six, though. And last time I checked, six is more than four. So I think LeBron's got the exact right amount of respect as everyone goes, he's fucking incredible. He's been incredible for a really fucking long time. And he will probably, no doubt, go on to continue being incredible for the foreseeable future. So how about we settle down with the fucking straw man arguments, LeBron, and just enjoy Taco Tuesday. Jesus, mate, settle. All right, another weekend season winner, Anthony Davis. I mean, wins a title, obviously, but also proved that if he were teammates with another top five NBA player, he could win a title. Nah, but for real, Anthony Davis, I feel like, has taken a big step in everyone's estimation, right? Like, we've all gone, top five NBA player, no problems. But now you're kind of like, look, we're taking him fully seriously as a basketball-playing pterodactyl who can literally play any way, shape, or form you need him to. We saw him battle Jokic. We saw him take on Jimmy Butler. We saw him fucking switch out on Dame Lillard in the first round. We saw him absolutely fucking destroy Houston in the second round. Like, this is a fully armed and operational Anthony Davis, right? And you're like, oh, shit. And he's got LeBron sitting there. And that leads very nicely in the next one. The Lakers are obviously season 2019-20 winners because they won the fucking title. No shit, Jimmy! Yeah, I get it. But at the same time, they're big fucking winners because you know what they've got on the books after next season? That's right. Nothing! Fucking hell. AD and LeBron. LeBron can opt out after next season. Anthony Davis, he can actually opt into his contract this season, become a free agent again after next year, or he can sign a big deal now. The point being, basically, if they bring everybody back on 1 year, they don't overpay for Kuzma or Caruso or Danny Green or literally anybody on like multi-year deals, KCP, etc. I mean, they could have pretty clear books and then sit there and go, all right, who's our pick to play next to AD and LeBron? That's when we should really be fucking worried. It's a slightly KD to the Warriors proposition. The thing is going to be as well, we have no idea what the cap's going to be. So the Lakers to have clean books basically from here on out is fucking huge. Because they can keep maneuvering. They can sign one-year deals. People are going to want to play with LeBron and AD. We saw it happen this year. Rondo, Dwight, Jared Dudley, Danny Green, basically, etc., etc., etc. It happens. So the Lakers are sitting there going, look, we're pretty happily set up for a couple of years worth of contending. What do you reckon? Boom. So away you go. Speaking of Lakers, I mean, J.R. Smith is obviously a season 2019-20 weekend winner because, A, dude just won another ring without doing fucking anything. He's just like, you know what? All I did was hang out in fucking Orlando for 3 months, chill the fuck out, hang out with my bros, probably get high as fuck back in my room, not get COVID, and never wear a shirt again. I never have to wear a shirt again. Two-time NBA champion, J.R. Smith. Boom. That's a win. You gotta love that. And speaking of which, JaVale McGee should actually legally change his name to three-time NBA champion JaVale McGee. He's got one less ring than Shaq. That is fucking incredible. Good on you, JaVale. For a giant spud, that's incredible. And Jared Dudley now has more rings than Charles Barkley, Steve Nash, and Karl Malone combined. So I'd say he's a 19-20 winner. Eric Spoelstra, look, obviously a big winner to come out of this season. Dude is a gun squad, has made another finals. He's got Butts, Bam, Hero, Dunkey, Robbo, Crowder, cap space. I've got to feel like Spo is going to go into his holidays feeling pretty good after this season. Just go, fuck, all right, this is not bad, you know? Could be a lot worse. Who else is out there that was a season 2019-20 winner? Tyler Hero. There goes my hero. Watch him fucking ball and bang Kuzma's ex. Look, even though he wasn't capital G great in the finals, that 37 versus Boston will be fucking forever as awesome as shit. And it's like, oh yeah, he's good. And he will probably continue to be good. Other winners, Frank Vogel. Obviously, Lakers coach. No one knows who the fuck he is. Or look, if you ask like fucking Joe McBlow on the goddamn street, hey, who's the Lakers coach? They'll be like, Phil Jackson? I don't know. Frank Vogel, one of seven championship winning coaches in the NBA right now, which is hilarious because one of the other ones is still Ty Lue. You got Pop, Kerr, Nurse, Carlisle, Doc, Spo, and he becomes eight, I believe. So that's pretty cool. Good on you, Frank. There's a bloke who can also just sort of start slowly racking up a shit ton of wins with this Lakers squad. And because he's won in his first year, and this actually goes back to the Lakers point I wanted to make as well. Not only do they have a shit ton of cap space, LeBron and Anthony Davis, they won the title in the first year that LeBron and AD were together, which leaves them in a position of power where they don't have to be fucking chasing their tail the entire time going, ah, we've got to appease AD and LeBron. We've got to appease everybody. They've already won one. Position of power. They're fucking laughing. The same thing goes for Frank Vogel. He's now sitting there going, holy shit, mate, I might end up like Rudy fucking Tomjanovich with a couple of rings right here. What's going on? How good is this? All right, other winners from this season, Luka Doncic. We've basically forgotten everything from the bubble already, haven't we? But that was a hell of a season from Luka. He was absolutely amazing. His game winner against the Clippers, just absolutely fucking next level insane. But just think about Luka's numbers. In year two, the dude's not even 21 yet. Well, I think actually, no, he is 21, but still. 28.8 points. 9.4 rebounds, 8.8 assists a game. Are you fucking kidding me? In his age 20 season, that is absolutely fucking bonkers. Luka, unbelievable. 28.8 points a game. Almost average a triple-double. And it's a better triple-double than Rusty's, I'll tell you that much, which is sad, but anyway. Ja Morant is a season winner. He was one of the single most exciting players you can imagine. And the flip side is, think of all the fucking hype that was around Zion. And it all just fell in a fucking heap because he was always injured, played 19 games, fuck off Zion. Ja was right there all season. All he did was kick ass and take names. And I cannot fucking wait to see Ja Morant play basketball again. He was a revelation. He was fantastic. He was more fucking... He was like... Speaking of super spreaders, like, he spreads joy like fucking Trump spreads COVID. Like, holy shit. Ja Morant, what a gun. I love him. Dame Lillard is a season winner as well. Yes, they made the Western Conference Finals last year, got bounced in the first round this year, but he and the Blazers are going to be so much fun if they're all healthy next season, right? If we get one season of Dame, CJ, Nurk, Zachy Cakes, Lesbian, Allen Collins, Gary Terrence Trent Darby Jr., like Anthony Simons, if they bring back Melo, that'd be awesome. Bring it on. But I love some Dame. He was awesome this year. Really cemented his position as a top flight superstar in the NBA. The Nuggets, season winners. They're looking good. Made a Western Conference Finals. The thing is, the last 2 years, the big question has been the Nuggets. Ah, can we trust them? They came back from 3-1 down in two goddamn series. I think we can trust them now at least a little bit and say, yes, they are good. Dwight Howard, he's a season winner. I hate him. He's an idiot, but he won a title in Orlando. Good on him. It'd be nice if he just retired now, right? Kostas Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak, won a title. Just the different one, the youngest one. Jay Kidd, I mentioned he's a season winner. Comes out of, like, you know, everybody going, ah, oh, Etu Bruto? Brutus, there we go. It's fucking better polish up my Caesar right there. But Jay Kidd, everyone expected him to stab Frankie Vogel in the back. Vogel never gave him the chance. Kidd's now probably going to happily bounce to another gig somewhere else, if not another season in LA land. The Bulls, they're season winners. But Jimmy, they were shit. Yep, but they got rid of their front office and they fired that fucking sentient Jim Boylan. So all is fucking roses from here on out for the Bulls, isn't it? Yeah. Hey, are season 19-20 winners the Wizards? But Jimmy, that was shit. They really, really, really were. But this hiatus and then pushing next season back means this season, basically, it was always going to be a write-off. We know that. They didn't trade Brad Beal. That's a win. They will probably get John Wall back for next season. That's a huge win. So I guess they come out kind of winners, kind of, even though in the standings after the bubble, they end up lower than Charlotte, which meant they're complete fucking losers. But anyway, Jingling Joe Ingles, he's a season winner. Why, Jimmy? Well, because he's fucking Jingles. He's always a winner. He's a legend. Same for Paddy Thrills, Aaron Bangers Baines, Big Simo Ben Simmons, Aussie Matisse Thybulle, Kung Fu Thon McCur, King Daly, Dante, Kangaroo Kobe, Rowdy, every Aussie getting a look in. They're all winners in my eyes, aren't they? Speaking of which, the Suns. The story of the non-playoff part of the bubble. They went 8-0 without their best player. Bangers. Yeah, the Rona. Imagine a fully armed and operational Bangers who dropped, what, 37-10 basically just before the hiatus? He was just getting warmed up, motherfucker. Love it. Golden State are winners. They gave it the old San Antonio. The old San Antonio Bandera Spurs. When the Admiral, David Robinson, fucked up his leg. They sat him for the year. He could have come back, but they're like, nah, we're good. We'll tank for Tim Duncan. 25 years later, boom. Golden State, same thing. Klay Thompson out. Steph Curry hurt, what, 6 games into the season? Boom, gone. We're tanking. We got the number 2 pick. Laughing. Y'all forgot about Dre. Golden State, Steph, Klay, Draymond, Wigo, top 2 draft pick, Minnesota's pick next year. They are laughing. Laughing. And finally, the Nets. Winners of season 19-20. Put up a gutsy performance, made of the playoffs. You know, didn't look too bad in their sweep. But at the same time, they got killed. They got straight killed, didn't they? It was a bit of a shame. But, oh well.
So he got straight killed.
They have Kyrie and KD back to fuck with everyone's brains next year. I already hate this team so much, and I'm going to love hating them. They're going to try to trade away my sweet baby carrots, LeVert. I hate them so much already, but that's a win. Brooklyn, they need a fucking persona, and if the persona is fucking idiot moron dipshits who everyone hates, boom, sorted. All right, let's do some losers, shall we? I reckon we should. Jimmy, press the button.
We're not losers.
No, you two are winners, big winners. When I grow up, I want to marry a big winner like you guys.
Shut up.
Loser.
Loser.
Loser. All right, some season losers, shall we? Bronny James, LeBron James Jr. Enjoy Taco Tuesday, mate, because I reckon he's going to get an ass-whooping the likes he's never seen before. Won't be able to sit down for a fucking week once Dad gets home. Smoking weed on the gram. What are you doing, Bronny? What are you doing? Giannis is a season loser, but Jimmy, he won the MVP. Yep, and got bundled out in the second round, and his little brother won a ring. Two MVPs ain't shit if your little brother has a fucking championship before you. Love it. I'm speaking, well, not from experience. I'm the smartest, most handsome of my brothers. But at the same time, two of them could kick the... Well, all three of them could kick the shit out of me because I'm actually now the smallest. So, and I'm not small. So, yeah, feel for you, Giannis. The Sixers are season losers. A shit show of a year from start to finish. And the best bit is nothing's going to change. The front office just finished its thorough investigation of how they should all keep their jobs and found that, surprise, surprise, they should all keep their jobs. That's pretty good. It's great bringing in Doc Rivers. That's fine. But the thing is, if the fucking idiots in charge making all the dumb fucking idiot choices are in charge still, they're going to make more fucking dumb idiot choices, aren't they? Yeah. Good job, Sixers. Zion's knees. Season losers. Bro, that bubble run was some of the most disappointingly hype shit ever from Zion. His season in general, like, he came out, was awesome, but he just, that rig... It's awesome that he's explosive, but how long do we really expect this to last? So Zion, mate, just cut a little bit of weight. Come on, man. Boogie Cousins is a season loser. Signed for the, I mentioned this one very quickly on Monday. Signs for the minimum with the Lakers. Tears his ACL. Looks like he's going to go, be good to go by the playoffs. They cut Boogie so they could sign one of the Morris twins. This is the second time his ring chase got hurt, missed out on a title as well. I mean, last year, he got hurt, came back for the Warriors, but they ended up losing to Toronto anyway. So, tough scenes for Boogie. Talk about him again later. The Clippers, they never clicked, never had the run where you're like, oh, fuck, here come the Clippers, just because Kawhi. Yeah. Was always managing his load. Paul George was always a little bit off and, you know, hurt here and there. And they just, look, they added two of the top 10 players in the NBA to a fun team from the years prior and just didn't work. And now they're over the barrel for this season, right? With both Kawhi and Paul George able to opt out. And you know that Paul George is looking across the hall at the Lakers like, oh, I'd be the world's best KCP. And everyone's like, yeah, you probably would be, Paul George. You probably would be. Your middle name is Third Banana, Paul Third Banana George, right there. Knicks and the Knicks fans, another year wasted, another coach fired, another savior coach hired. Best of luck, Tibbs. And Steve Stoot is out there. That's right, marketing consultant for the Knicks, out there wearing bull shorts on the golf course. Good job, Steve. You dipshit. The Detroit Basketball Pistons, is there a bleaker outlook than in Motor City right now? They've got Blake and D-Rose. Unfortunately, it's the year 2020, not 2010. Tough. They're fucked. They're just fucked. And their season was fucked, and they're now fucked. Sacramento are also fucked. Got to look at Luka and then go, wait. So Vlade didn't draft him, fucked up our team reportedly, and then just bailed? And we've still got Luke Walton as our coach? What the fuck? Yeah, tough scenes there in Sacramento. But look, hopefully they'll turn the ship around. They've still got Diaz of Fox. Hopefully Marvy Bags works out okay. The Raptors. Oh, how are they season losers, Jimmy? They're the two seed. Yeah, look, but they just came up real fucking short against the Celtics, didn't they? And a big part of that was Siakam disappearing and being shithouse in the playoffs. And it's just a weird end to their year where you're like, okay, so are we going to bank on Norm being really good from here on out? I thought it was going to be Norm and Siakam that pushed us through. Now we've got Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka. Going to make some decisions. Tough scene for the Raptors. Russell Westbrook, speaking of which, it's a season loser right there. Gunning it for the last 2 months of the regular season. We go on hiatus. He gets the Rona and then sucks in the bubble. And just copping it left, right, and center. And speaking of which, Houston, they got straight killed as well.
So he got straight killed
by the Lakers. Never even threatened them. Mike D bounces. Now they're going to end up with maybe a Van Gundy. Because Jeff Van Gundy's still in the running for that job, which is absolutely crazy. But the final one is season 1920. Look, us. We were winners and we're also losers because now we don't have basketball. It was a great wild season that took a fucking year to finish. But really, we're losers now because if you're like me, you find the fact that Talen Horton Tucker just became the first player born in the 2000s to win an NBA championship. And I think we're season 2019-20 losers because I'm old as fuck now, officially. Holy shit, he was born in the 2000s and just won a title. I remember what I was doing in the thousands. Ah, jeez. All right. Anyway, we'll be back in a second with some quick yeah nahs, and then we'll go to Hammer right after. Let's say this one.
This is Cam Glidden.
This is Anthony Drimmick.
This is Mitch McCarron.
This is Jason Kadee.
This is Daryl McDonald.
Hey guys, this is Hugh Greenwood.
Yo, what's going on? This is Ellie.
This is Mark Worthington, or commonly known as Wurtho, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, let's do some yeah nahs. They are brought to you by thedailyliquor.com. If you're in Melbourne, you're under lockdown still. Fuck. Don't waste any of your outside time going to the bottle and staring at the goddamn glass going, what am I going to have, bro? I just don't know. When you can go to thedailyliquor.com, hook up with some fucking awesome Biro specials, and they'll bring it to you. That's right, delivery. Amazing deals. They've also got wines and cocktails. Old mate got a bunch of wines delivered the other day. She fucking loves the two she's already tried. That's unreal. Get around that. So, the best part is use the code STRAYA. If you spend $20, you'll get a free six pack of the Dos X, which I fucking love. I drink it all day, especially with the AFL finals right here. Stock up, mate. A couple of slabs and boom, you get a free six pack. Well, shit, just buy a six pack. You get a free six pack on me at this point. But there you go. It's for the Melbourne metro area. Same day delivery before 1 o'clock. Go get around the dailyliquor.com right now. Smash the code STRAYA. Buy a sixer. Buy a bottle of wine. Buy some cocktails. Watch the finals. Get a sixer on your mate Jimmy. The AFL finals, that is. Yeah. Nice one. Thank me later when you're sitting there shit-faced going, this is awesome. All right, some quick yeah nahs where we take a bunch of NBA storylines, decide whether they're more yeah or nah. Number one, Matt Hours asks, Jimmy, will LeBron ever surpass MJ as the GOAT? Laker three-peat and LBJ win 6 rings out of 12 and potentially 6 finals MVPs to match MJ, along with all his individual records in the playoffs and finals, all at by then, what, a 37, 38-year-old? Yeah, nah. Oh, this is the thing. I want to say nah because I doubt he can surpass him. I think that's the real sort of key moment there is surpass, right? Like at the moment, there's still an entire Hall of Fame career literally between the two of them. There's 2 titles with 2 finals MVPs, 1 NBA MVP, league MVP, 1 Defensive Player of the Year, 4 more defensive all-first teams, 9 more scoring titles. That's what MJ still got over LeBron. That's like someone's completely separate Hall of Fame career, right? But the thing is, I'm not entirely convinced about the surpassing, but the fun part is that once LeBron's all said and done, it's an argument. And it's a good argument. It's a fun, you've got cumulative career versus best player. And as Matt says here, right, like if he gets another, if the Lakers three-peat, right, and he's won 6 out of 12, you go, well, 6 and 6, that's awesome. But then for LeBron to get to 6, then you've got to argue he lost 6 as well. So it's all up in the air. The flip side is this is like he went to the finals 12 times. This is why it's fun. You can go back and forth on it all fucking day. It's like if you've got the heap amount of assists that he's always going to have, all-time scoring leader maybe, the rebounds, all the playoff records, all the regular season records. I think 6-0 versus 6 out of 12. It's still going to be really hard to just say, oh, he's surpassed him, you know? It's tricky, but that's why it's a fun argument. Matt Hours also asked, do we ever see Boogie again after his injury woes and missed / almost titles at Golden State and the Lakers? Yeah, nah. Yeah, we see him again. He's too talented and never got the crazy fuck you contract, so he'll always be sort of around for a little bit, trying to, you know, make a little bit more coin, and good on him. I wouldn't be surprised if he takes Dwight's spot on the Lakers next season, right? Like, AD loves him. Very clearly, he'll happily sign a one-year deal. And, best of all, he's not Dwight. So they'll be like, oh, shit, that's great. So I'm interested to see how that goes. Brad McKeegan, on your Brad, he asked Jimmy, yeah, no, the only way to make the Heaters better is to add bangers. Whoa, yeah, nah. I mean, the only way, nah. It would be a good way. A good way to make him better would be to get Giannis. But I mean, the Heat have already got shitty Canadian bangers in Kelly Olynyk and shitty American bangers in Myers Leonard. So they could very much use the real thing. And to be honest, I mean, you saw with Kelly Olynyk, every time he was out there stretching the floor, the problem is Olynyk is shit defensively. Bangers can stretch the floor and is a fucking defensive menace. Dude, if the Heat went, shit, let's roll the dice with bangers, boom, watch out. Brad also asked, yeah, nah, are we about to see a big spike in COVID cases in the LA area? Yeah, nah, fuck yeah. Oh, geez. Just think about, like, all the Lakers fans who, like, would have been, you know, sitting around going to barbecues, hanging out, watching it at other people's houses and shit, let alone celebrating together. Scotty Baxter also asked, on you, Scott, yeah, nah, Miami need one more star. It will be scary as next year. Yeah, nah, look, nah, they're already scary as fuck, but if they can swing a CP3 trade or something, if Goran opts out, and even if Kelly Olynyk opts in and they can trade him for CP3, they're scary as shit. I mean, one more year of, like, Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero getting better and Bam, as well as Butts. If they got CP3 as well, they'd have a couple of late-game killers. Boah. But yeah, they could also just use Giannis, couldn't they? All right. Real quick, unpopular opinion of the day.
Look at me.
It's been 2 days since the Lakers won the title, and it's weird, right? I don't think any title that I can remember in, like, the last 25 years has just so quickly been like, oh, yeah, that's right, Tid before. You know, like, we've just kind of gone, eh. I guess everyone seems to have moved on. Like, my Twitter is all fucking shit tons of basketball. And it's like, I don't know, a bunch of fucking LA murals coming from the same city that defaced all the LeBron murals in the first place. That's interesting. But without a championship parade and all the shots of JR tipping Hennessy into folks' mouths and LeBron smoking a shit ton of cigars and Vogel giving flaccid dick speeches and shit and Dion being high as fuck in the background, like, it just doesn't quite hit the same way. And it'll be fascinating to know what Lakers fan Tim, I mean, talking to him, and he's kind of like, yeah, it was fucking neat, but it's like, all right. He's like, only watched half the game. So I don't know, man. Finally, let's do an Outback Takehouse and then we'll go to Hammer. What do you reckon? Oh, no, we'll have a quick look at the odds. Yeah, let's do that. It's Wednesday at Outback, and you know what that means? Ah, yes, West Sydney Razorback Ribs, cooked by West Sydney Razorback legend Derek Rucker, only at Outback. And today's flame grill take is, Giannis Antetokounmpo should definitely force his way out of Milwaukee, but he shouldn't force his way to Golden State. He should force his way to Miami, only at Outback. Interesting one, because you got to think about Jimmy Butler, a dude who doesn't want to shoot that much. Bam, a dude who can't stretch the floor either. Really makes you think Brett Brown's coaching job on the Sixers, where you've got Big Simo Ben Simmons surrounded by people who are happy to shoot. Like, Joel Embiid will happily shoot from three. So will Al Horford, Tobias Harris, Joshy Richo. Like, how did they not make that work? Whereas Spoelstra can, because he's a good coach. So, yeah, I'm not going to get too burnt and bent out of shape about Brett Brown. And finally, let's have a look at the odds for next season, shall we? Real quick, brought to you by playup.com.au/NBA Australia. Go there. The Lakers are favourites for next year, $4.40. Clippers at $5.50. At playup.com.au, the Warriors are really, really short odds. They're $6.50. I have seen them at $10 elsewhere. Same with Brooklyn here at PlayUp at $12. Milwaukee, $7.50. So yeah, an interesting sort of top five or six, right? Lakers, Clippers, sure. Warriors at PlayUp, very short. Bucks at $7.50. Nets, $12. Celtics at $14. The Heat are at $17. They just made the finals. And to be honest, they could have won it if Goran and Bam hadn't been, oh, who knows. 17 as well for the Raptors, 19 bucks for the Nuggets, who made the Western Conference Finals, same for the Houston Rockets. The Mavs are at 21, tied with the Sixers, $21 to 1. And then you sort of get to the Pelicans and Jazz at 41, Suns and Blazers at 51, and then the rest are all sort of $81 to 1 and under. But there you go. I don't know. It's the fact that Golden State are very short on playup.com.au seems smart. But the Heat being at 17 without knowing what the fuck moves they could do over this offseason is pretty wild. I'll tell you what. All right, let's go to our chat with Shane the Hammer Heel. And then once we get back, we'll close out with Jingles HR. And that'll be it. All right, enjoy this. This is a fucking great chat. God damn it. Heel is awesome to chat to. Enjoy.
This is Mitch Creek, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Greece, you go there. I mean, as well, like, it's a bit of a trailblazing sort of move as well. You do have a couple of Europe stints. I mean, it must have been like a big sort of lifestyle change to go over there at that point as well, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I went to Greece. When I left Minnesota, came back home, I was out for the 3.5 months or whatever, getting my calf right, played the short season in Australia, and I was like, no, I want to go to Europe. And the Greek league was the best league in Europe at that time outside the NBA, and it was so competitive. I fell in love with playing in Greece and playing in Europe, just the passion of the fans and the way it was. And you know, you're always under pressure, you never got paid on time, so there was always a shit fight. You know, the fans were throwing shit at you, but when you're at home, they chanted and they loved you. They jump on the court and they, you know, hug you and kiss you and all the rest. It was a great experience. And having young kids, and we'd go and, you know, sit down and drink coffee for 2 hours, we just changed our mentality of how to relax living in Greece and enjoy the time. I played probably some of my best basketball in Greece. I reckon I had some of the best games that I've ever had in my career in a tough league, having to perform for a team that had come up from second division that most people thought was going to get straight back down to second division again. But we ended up making the European competitions, which was crazy. To me, that was as much of a success in that environment, making Europe for that team, than what it was winning a championship for the Sydney Kings.
Awesome. God damn. It's a hell of a challenge, I tell you that much. Jesus. So for a bloke who's had 61 in a game in the NBL, you also dropped 15 in fuck all time against my beloved Supersonics. So I grew up as a Seattle Supersonics fan, huge Rain Man fan, huge Gary Payton fan. I own, way too much Sonics paraphernalia. Old mate, she yells at me all the time. There's like another fucking poster on the wall here in the studio. What are you going to do? I'm like, come on. but you've gone up against Gary Payton. You drop an immortal line on him about his $87 million contract as the first thing you're going to buy. $89 million contract, I think it was. The first thing you need to do when you get your 89 mil is buy yourself a jump shot. All-time great line. All-time great line. I mean, is that is that one of the best ones you've dropped, do you think?
Well, I wish I was smart enough to have come up with it just on the spot, but that was between all the shit that he was talking to me in Utah, and then when we finally came up against him in the Final Four and, dropped it on him, and he wasn't very happy, to be honest, as you could well imagine. But he was actually, when I came on the court for that game, and again, I wasn't playing much in Minnesota, but the game before in Washington, it was a bit of a blowout, and I came on. I might have had like 10 or 12 points in the last quarter. So then the next game we came home, and I started to feel it a little bit, and I'm like, if I get on, I'm ready to go here. And then we were playing against them, so it made it even a little bit more inspirational. And I think I came on with like 20 seconds to go in the third quarter. And I remember we're at the free throw line, and Payton walked up in the middle of the key, and he stood there, and he goes, I've got him. And he pointed at me. People would have been thinking, like, who the fuck is him? Like, why do you even care about him? He's on for 20 seconds. But anyway, he pointed at me and did it. And then I ended up staying on for the fourth quarter, and that was when I hit the 5-3. So it was a great memory. And it's funny that, you know, people put that video out sometimes, and I still get little goosebumps because you remember family being in there in the crowd. You remember how loud it was. And just feeling, yep, I belong here. I know I can get this done here. And I remember talking to my mates after the game back in Australia. And back then, the games weren't televised all the time. They had to go to the casino and they were watching that game. So then I call them. I'm like, mate, we're good to go. I'm ready to go now. And the next game, I got on for 16 seconds. And I didn't get on for like however many games after that. It was so frustrating.
Brutal. That is the immortal. So that's actually a drop that we have on NBA Australia. It's praise the Lord, I am healed. What an absolute fucking electric moment that is. I don't know, like you've got to be pretty fucking hot to hit 5 3s and a quarter out of 9 shots too. Well, not bloody bad.
I was pretty aggressive. 9 shots, 9 3s and a quarter. Like I said before, you know, you just didn't see that because there was times that team was shooting 9 3s. But, you know, I think when you get an opportunity and you're there, I wasn't there for my defense, so I was going to let it rip. And I think when you – I always had that in my mind as a player. Like if I make my first one, I feel like I can go on a serious run.
Yep.
And I made that first shot and then, you know, they're leaving you out there to be able to do it. So it was great.
So Anstey's also got a couple of awesome stories about him playing against MJ and the Bulls as part of their big championship run. Obviously, you would have gotten to play them twice that year as well in 97.
Yep.
What was that like? Was there a moment where you're just like, holy shit, that is Michael Jordan. Fuck. Here we go. In the NBA. All right. I think you lost both of those games as well off the top of my head. I should, you know, bring that up. But yeah.
Well, not a surprise.
Exactly.
It was one of the most amazing things about my time in the NBA is going to Chicago and the introductions.
Yep.
It was like I was like a little kid as the lights went out and they started saying all of the players' names and they got to Michael Jordan. And you couldn't hear his name be introduced just because of how loud it was in the stadium and the anticipation of him being introduced. So sitting there watching him was unbelievable. By the time I got on, he was already off, so he got the opportunity to sit there and applaud me, hit a 3 or 2.
Nice.
So lucky for him.
He got to watch the hammer in action. I love it. Nice one. You end up winning an NBL title with Sydney in 03. Just a classic team as well. That's one that's probably etched in a lot of people's memories, I reckon, the first Sydney title too. That must have just been a fucking like electric moment, right?
Well, it was incredible, really, because, you know, to come back from Europe to play in Sydney when I had the chance to play with Melbourne. So Lindsay and Andrew and Leonard and Hoagie really went hard to be able to keep me in Melbourne. And I looked at the Sydney team and I'm like, oh, shit, this team's a long way off from a championship. But it was always that challenge that no one thought it could be done. And it was always perceived as the worst basketball franchise in Australia, that they were always going to underachieve. And we really did for a couple of years after that as well until Gorge came. And the team that was built was awesome. Some great guys, you know, Chris Williams, MVP of the league, such a great teammate as well. He was awesome. I look back now and that was one time that I was actually patient and happy that I stuck it out to be able to try and win that first championship. And your first championship and doing it as the first of a franchise, I think is something that is pretty special.
Yeah, and RIP Chris Williams as well. Jeez. Still weird.
Yeah.
That guy died. But anyway.
Sad thing.
Really sad. And obviously there's like as we sort of talked about, the NBL goes through its weird sort of patches in the end of the thousands. You have the bizarre sort of taking on the Dragons and like sort of going, all right, well, now I'm a player coach. Fuck, how did I just suddenly turn into Bill Russell? What just happened? Now I'm Tommy Heinsohn. What the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
That's like replacing Mark Price as well. Like that's just it must have been an absolute just head spinner.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I was so excited to play for Mark Price. Obviously being a scoring point guard and all the rest of it, it was one of the things that actually enticed me to come out of retirement, to be able to go down there and I helped Mark Cowan actually recruit him and all the rest of it. And, but I mean, it became pretty apparent to everybody that was involved that, you know, he wasn't a coach of a basketball team and he was there more for a holiday than anything else. So when they approached me, they said, we'll give you 24 hours if you want to take it on. And one of the things that I looked at and I was like, well, if I don't do this, who are they going to bring in?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who do I really want to play for that's not coaching in the NBL now that could virtually take it over? And, so it was a big, obviously going to be a big challenge. You know, a new franchise was always going to be hard, but we turned that thing around. It was absolutely that season to make the playoffs from 0-6, you know, with an undersized sort of team that was thrown together was really exciting.
Yeah.
And something that I was really proud to be part of. The next season, obviously with a low budget and injuries and all the rest of it, was the other side of it, where it becomes really disappointing. And that was the challenge of being a coach and a player when there are injuries and you still have to go and drop 20, but you're still managing, you know, 20 people at the same time, and you hadn't played for a couple of years. So that always became a big challenge.
Yep. And it's just like, I feel like there's a great like documentary or something just in the South Dragon saga. It's just got all these crazy ups and downs, and the fact that it culminates in a fucking title and then it's just gone again. It's just, it's absolutely fucking bonkers. Like when you look back at it, right?
Well, it's amazing because then the following year, so Mark Cowan gave me the opportunity to stay and be assistant coach to Brian. So I knew Brian was coming in. And, you know, the thing that made it even more interesting is the Sydney Kings were out the following year.
Yep.
The Brisbane Bullets were out the following year.
Yep.
So all of those teams combined of being able to bring the best players from both teams to Melbourne to be able to throw double the budget of what we had the year before to win it and then go, all right, well, we got what we want. We're out of here. It's like, shit. And that's sort of the mentality of how it was, because you're thinking, are you going to build a franchise? So the second year, we obviously had Joey Ingles. We tried to get Patty Mills, tried to get Nate Jawai, tried to get Julian Kazoo, you know, a young team to be able to build with. It was a different mentality than just trying to throw a massive budget at key players that would give you a chance to be able to win it straight away. So it sort of changed overnight, but happy they got the championship and, you know, you put it down as another experience.
I mean, it's pretty funny because we had Wurtho on the show as well in the NBA hiatus, and just sort of chatting to him, it's just like all he can really do just like looking back on it, shake his head and just like, I don't know, like it was just fucking wild. So obviously there's the Gold Coast Blaze stint, but also you end up going on to coach Sydney as well, the Ben Magnan, Aaron Bruce era. Fuck yes, Brucey.
Yeah.
Love that. AJ Ogilvy, he played, what, the year after, the second year? Shit, I can't remember. What was it like being the coach of the team that you fronted for so long with the Sydney Kings? I mean, we've just seen Drewy just sort of go through it as well and just go, fuck, yeah, cool, can't do this, and sort of step away from it. And, I mean, it must be just, like, pretty wild.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was good. I mean, you know, I got the call up because the, you know, Kings had only been back for 2 years. They finished last, and then six games to go in their second season, they're still sitting on the bottom of the ladder. They got injury problems, Moose steps away, and then I got the call to say, would you come in and coach the last six games? So I was like, yeah, no worries, I'll come in and coach. Got in there and were able to win three of those six games and then negotiated a couple of year deal. But it was always going to be a bit challenging. The biggest challenge with the Sydney Kings in those days is there was 15 owners that put money in and wanted to coach and select the team.
Yep.
That was the difficult thing. And didn't want to spend the salary cap. So, you know, in either season, we just didn't have the salary cap. And, you know, you need money to be able to buy players to be able to build with. And so, you know, you work with what you've got. And Madge, who, you know, came to my 50th the other day, him and Tommy Gallup, restricted numbers. We stayed within the numbers. But, you know, those guys that I just loved. And, you know, Ben Madgen, such a work ethic, such a good guy, ended up leading the league in scoring for me, trying to put him in the right environment, and recruited Tommy in from the Gold Coast. And, you know, to make the playoffs in our first year was something that was pretty special from the position they were at. And, again, the second year was frustrating for me because, again, the budget got cut. And we missed the finals by a game. So it was frustrating. But at the end of the day, the 2 years, I got to the stage where I said, I'm not gonna work in this environment. So I went to New Zealand and won a championship in New Zealand and decided that wasn't going to be for me with the Sydney Kings, with that group of owners the way they were.
Yeah. I mean, and it's pretty cool. I mean, you've now gone on to do, you know, lots of development stuff as well. I mean, we've had Jace Cadet on the show and he was just rapt, I think, talking about working with you, considering that you and his family are like longtime rivals, right? The West Sydney versus Sydney kind of vibe. And but he loved it. And I think a lot of that sort of the aspect of having dudes like yourself out there helping like the next generation is just invaluable. I think, for those dudes. And I mean, obviously he loved it. Is that cool for you working with like one-on-one with people and giving back?
Yeah, well, I think like it's funny because the Cadiz, on one hand, were rivals from, you know, West Sydney and Sydney, but my history back with the Cadiz is really, really close with, you know, his cousin Grant Cadiz, who was my manager, who's still one of my closest friends today. So, you know, working with Jason was great. He flew down from Brisbane, did three workouts or something like that. But I've got a real passion for trying to put people in an environment like I did and trying to show them the work ethic it takes and of how many shots you've got to get up, the intensity you've got to train with, some of the techniques that now you have to be able to add to your game on both sides of your body. So it's what I do, you know, every day with my own academy and coaching, you know, in schools and things like that. Not so much about coaching teams. It's about trying to make players better. And it's a real rewarding part of that to be able to see players get better, and probably no better example than my daughter, just because we've done it for so long and she's so used to being able to, you know, go through our routines, and seeing her get success is great as well.
Yeah, I was literally, there was like my next little sort of moment, like her now sort of going up and having a shot at the WNBA draft and everything. That's just got to be awesome, like coaching your daughters and, you know, just sort of seeing their development as well. And I mean, you can sort of see the videos and everything that you post on what Insta and Twitter and everything. I mean, she's a gun. Like, holy shit. Like, that's going to be fucking cool as.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I've got three daughters, and I said to my kids, I've already had my career. I'm not trying to live my life through you guys. You guys do what you want to do. Find your passion and then follow it. And, you know, the other two girls like playing, but they didn't like practicing or anything. And the young one has just loved it. And I said to her, I'm not organizing a routine or workouts or whatever else. If you want me, you know where I'm at. You need to plan it. So she has a plan, and she's like, yep, this is when we're working out this week. This is how we're going. It's just into it. So the things that she can do on both sides of her body compared to what I could do, even in my prime, she's just at a different level. And even from the shooting side, she set a record the other day. We would finish our shooting, and it's something I got Jason to do. I won't tell you his score, but we'd have to make 100 threes after we'd finished a, you know, 75 to 90 minute session, and we count how many it takes to make those 100 threes. And if you miss 20, you're out the back door. You don't even get to finish. But the other day she set a new record for 100 out of 107.
Jesus.
Yeah, so she can really shoot the ball. And she's just drilled now. She's just into it. So it's nice seeing, you know, her passion. I think really good things are going to happen. I think she had a great season for Townsville, and she's playing under the best coach in the WNBL with Shannon Seabomb, and I know he's going to put her in a really good environment too.
Love it. All right, real quick, rapid fire, best NBL city rivalry you got to be a part of?
Oh, probably Adelaide. Ooh. Adelaide used to give it to me.
Awesome.
They used to give it. You know, do you remember the double bird that I had to give Adelaide one day, full house?
Yes. That's fucking awesome. Ah, oh, amazing. I forgot about that. That's fucking great, of course. Unreal. Well, favorite NBA team? Did you have one?
NBA team?
Yeah, NBA team.
Well, I always felt for the Spurs because I'd spent some time there. But, like, right now, this whole year, I've enjoyed Miami more than any other team.
Nice.
So I don't really follow a particular team, you know, all year. Follow more players and then teams where I really like their style, and Miami's been that team this year.
Good shit. Best player you ever played against where you're just like, holy shit, this guy.
Well, I mean, we played against LeBron in the 2004 Olympics, and even seeing him so young there, you're looking at this bloke and you're saying, oh my goodness, look at the size of him, but look how athletic he is. He plays like a guard and he's like our center.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, he's obviously still doing it now, and it was pretty crazy 16 years ago to see it.
Yeah. Favorite teammate ever, and why is it Gazy?
Drewy was certainly up there on favorite teammates, and probably one of the best players I ever played with. But one of my favorite teammates, actually, I've got two of them, Robert Sibley in Brisbane and Shane Froling in Brisbane.
Nice. That's legendary.
So two guys that were unbelievable role players, but great mates, and just enjoyed their company on and off the court.
So they take out the non-Gazy division. that's correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Favorite player you coach where you've just sort of gone, ah, they get it.
Yeah, Ben Madgen.
Oh, nice. Good call.
Yeah. All right. He's just unbelievable.
Love it. A couple of yeah-nahs, future of the NBL, Hammer. What do you reckon? Can we turn this obvious appetite for hoops in Australia into just crushing local attendance? What do you reckon? Yeah-nah?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Jack Jumpers, Illawarra, just now being the Hawks. What do you reckon? Yeah or nah? Oh,
nah. Jack Jumpers, what were they thinking with that name? I love having them back, but Jesus Christ, that's a shit name. Look. And the Hawks, I'm saying nah as well on the Hawks.
Yeah, look, anytime you can name a basketball team after ants, I'm not entirely convinced you should do it, Hammer.
Nah.
In terms of the NBL, right, do we get a season? Yeah, nah.
Yeah.
All right, do we do some hubs? What do you reckon? Yeah, nah?
Yeah.
Awesome. Can't wait. I'm excited as. Anyway, but this has been fucking great. For the 500th episode of NBA Australia, I could not be more over the moon to have had Shane the Hammer Heel on. Hammer, thank you so much for your time, mate. This has been fucking amazing.
Nah, my pleasure, mate. I appreciate you having me on, and nice being able to go down memory lane and talk about all of those experiences. So, appreciate it.
Hi, this is Ryan Brockoff, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Right, how good was that chat with Hammer? Oh, God, I love it. It was so much fun. All right, thanks heaps to Shane Hill for being our guest across the 500th and 501st episode of NBA Australia. That was legendary. I don't know what's going to top that. I don't know, jingles? Maybe. Simo? See how we go. Gazy. Anyway, that's it for today and probably for this week. We'll have a new NFL Australia as well this week for you. Keep an eye out for that if you can. We'll swing back for an NBA Australia next week. We'll start looking at free agency, start looking at the draft, and catch up on all the news. No doubt there'll be some more coaching stuff going on, etc. So make sure you're following NBA Australia on Twitter, Facey, IG. We're all over the socials all the time. Get around NBAAustralia.com/shop. Go buy a hoodie. Buy a t-shirt. I'm wearing actually my NBA Australia t-shirt right now. Got a couple of nice compliments on the at the cafe. That was pretty nice. I got the stubby holders, you know, everything. Get around it. Buy some merch. Help a brother out. Check us a rating and review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, whatever app you use on your Android phone. Whatever you can do, it really does help out. So please rate and review. TheDailyLiquor.com. If you're in Melbourne, go buy some booze, get it delivered to your door, use the code STRAYA and get a free six-pack on your mate, Jimmy. How good's that? All right, big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Go check out their new band, House Hats. They're up and running out of time's out now. It's the best. Huge thanks also to Joshua De La Renta's Fascinated, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sexed Eye, Green, and Dozers for all the tunes that you hear throughout the show. Give them all a smash on Bandcamp, Triple J and Earth, Facey, and remember, they can't play shows. Support them the way they support us. NBA Australia supports Australian bands. That's what we do. All right, we can close out today's show with a brand new Jingles HR as he answers a question from a man named Brett. All right. Awesome. We'll catch us next week, you dickheads. Have a good one, would you? This is NBA Australia saying, look after yourselves. And, Lederhosen. Oh, g'day. Joe Ingles here, head of Jingles HR, where we come up with HR solutions for you and your problems. Because, yep, I'm not just a dead set Aussie legend and the owner of a lot of real estate in Paul George's head, which I have now sold to a very angry client named D Rivers. But when I'm not sinking threes, talking trash, blowing kisses and looking after my kids, I'm the world's leading HR expert. So, let's get to this week's question, shall we? It comes from a Brett on a beach somewhere in Florida. Dearest Joe, I've just got a new job, which I then quit after looking at my prospects and seeing I might not have the employees I thought I'd have and a whole bunch of weird travel with all the COVID stuff going on. Do you think I've made a good move? Yours sincerely, Brett in Florida. Oh, geez, thanks for writing in, Brett. But yeah, look, as a HR manager, nothing grinds my fucking gears more than going through the long process of vetting, interviewing, and possibly organizing, negotiating and then fucking hiring someone, releasing it, letting everybody know about it, getting everything sorted, only for them to fucking turn around and quit like a month into the gig. So, to be honest, go fuck yourself. Because, as we say here at Jingles HR, if you've got a job, do the bloody job you're paid to bloody do. All right, that's all we've got time for this week on Jingles HR. I've been Joe Ingles. Get a job up, yeah.